Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith, and today we are joined by Joshua Virtue. Oh my gosh.
As soon as it started.
Literally Pavlovian. As soon as we hit record, Moody jumped into your lap.
Dude, I made it. I made the cut.
You absolutely made the cut. Were you worried?
I was really concerned. It's actually the only thing I've been thinking about since you guys told me about it, and I've been really anxious, and now, yeah.
No, now things are fine.
This is wild. Holy crap. Honestly, like, God is real. God is real.
And I'm God is real, and it is this cat.
You gotta change the album
this
title.
This is so nice. Nah, you can keep it. I'm an apostate. It's over. I'm just going down.
Cool. Well, I want to get into stuff. We're really glad to have you here. Thank you so much for being here.
Dude, thanks for having me, y'all. This is really
nice. We've already, like, plugged you on the show a couple times, especially when we had, if you haven't yet listened, if you're listening now, to the Lin Rai episode. I definitely recommend checking that one out, because that was, I learned about you first through Daniel Ryan, most likely, and then listened to your music, and I was like, this is great. Well, and, like, I think there were, like, a couple tracks that you had up, right?
And yeah, surely.
And then before the album, I mean.
Yeah. There was like a couple of singles I put out, mostly like kind of like sloppily mixed and mastered, but I was just like, people need to hear me. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, relatable. I learned about Lin Rai through you. And then we were like, yeah, I think we're also going to have Joshua on, but we don't know when. And now
it's here. Yes. It's happened.
And the cat is in lap.
Yeah. It's Everything's fate. Right with the world.
Everything is right. The radiator's in the ceiling. Everything's exactly where it should be.
Yeah. Have we talked about that enough on the podcast? Have we mentioned the radiator?
I mean, we've definitely referenced the radiator noise, because that's what I didn't get to, is like, yes, our radiators are in the ceiling, and it makes no sense. But they also, during the winter, just used to make this hellish hissing noise.
Can you do it? Can you do the hissing noise? It's like, oh, that's really good.
Yeah, if anybody that's listened to
prolonged hissing noise
episodes from last winter,
like winter of 2017,
right, we'll definitely be like, yeah, I remember that. It was terrible, and I never wanted to say anything because clearly you were
in over your head.
Yeah.
But then last winter, what we did is we would stop the recording for the hissing, but then it got to be that the hissing would last like 20 minutes.
You just gotta just go with it.
And so then we would stop the recording and then sit here for 20 minutes with our guests and then have to hit record. So then we'd be here for like 2.5 hours.
Oh my lord.
Yeah.
And so then we were like, we like called our landlords and we were just like, hi, we make audio recordings in our apartment. This needs to not happen. And then they came, and this is the most infuriating part. They came and they like turned something and it stopped.
So that means like the hissing and radiators is just like
it's so fixable.
It's like an unnecessary fucking nuisance. Like no point.
It's
like
a pressure thing. It has to do with like you just have to bleed it. You have to like
No. They like replaced out. They replaced like washers. It was like the dumbest thing that made the biggest difference in our lives. Like it just stopped entirely with a 5 minute visit. And we were just like, well, I guess that's how that goes down.
Yeah.
Sucks. Well,
that's such a happy cat.
Yeah. Oh, my God. They're so good.
So.
We can just end the interview right there. Yeah, exactly. We're talking about it. Yeah. We already discussed
it. We talked about the radiator. Well,
okay,
and
so I got to tell you, I really love the new album.
Thank you.
It's really, really great.
Thank you.
It's on nice. iTunes, if that's a thing. It's on Spotify too, right?
It's on DistroKid, everything. Yeah.
I saw
Spotify,
it's on
Apple
YouTube,
Music.
But it's under. Do you know anything about these when it says the artist's name - topic? Is that you or is that?
So yeah, that's like DistroKid. DistroKid like, got like you. Okay. Throws everything up on like, not on all streaming platforms, but like a lot of them, all like the big dudes, except for like Tidal. Because you know, title,
right.
And like, it does like Apple Music and
which Jay-Z
Spotify.
If you're listening.
And, oh, Jay-Z's listening.
Yeah,
Hope is here right now. Yeah. Hope is always here in spirit.
Yeah,
really, that hiss from the radiator was actually Hope's ad lib, just consistent.
Like, yeah.
Oh damn it! If only we had known.
Absolutely.
You've had Jay-Z on this podcast multiple times.
Yeah. Illustrious. No, I was asking because it definitely came on, and then there were like three ads that played, and I was God damn, I hope he's getting this, because like, why? Because it was like dumb too. It was like they were still running a political ad like a day after the election.
Yeah. Oh boy.
Anyway, all right.
I don't support that.
Post-faith dialogues. How can you introduce our audience to the album? Like, what does it feel like at this point?
At this point? Well, I mean, like, I know how it started for sure. Mm-hmm. Like, so, like, last winter I was just, like, near, like, clinically depressed and anxious. I don't know. I was just a mess all the time. I wasn't like showering or cleaning anything, which I'm sure is very relatable, but I sort of lost my job like very viciously on my part, where it was just like, I can't do this anymore. I freaked out and stopped and quit immediately. I had some money saved and I kind of just sat in my pajamas and kept recording. And, I don't know, it was sort of like a self-care routine. Mm-hmm. That's sort of how I put it. It began that way, but I think as, like, time went on, it sort of, like, I think just transcended into something more, because, like, it was a self-care thing for a while, but then it sort of became this way of dealing with, like, blackness in the context of, like, Christianity and sort of finding myself through that, and I've had a lot of... Oh, there it goes.
This is a mini version.
Yeah.
This is the mini radiator hiss.
Mm-hmm. Hope is here.
Hope is just on low volume right now.
Yeah.
yeah, but it was just, I don't know, it was kind of just a way of sort of like solidifying my like rebellion against a lot of traditional ideas that I've been raised with, and not so traditional ideas that I had adopted from people who were either abusive to me ultimately, or just problematic in the way that they shared their spiritual experiences and sort of like I don't know, like oppress people with them on an interpersonal level. And I have been like shedding those ideas like little by little over the years, and after a certain point I kind of just didn't have anything left. So I was like, well, what do I build up from here? Do I start building my own thing? Do I start building my own belief structure? Like, I kind of disassembled and dismantled everything that I had come to learn and believe and had to restructure from my own, like, personhood. And mm-hmm. It was a pretty transcendent experience. That's why it's like post-faith. It's not like no faith. It's like post-faith, because, like, mm-hmm. that's one's done. So now it's like, what's the new faith, you know? Like... Mm-hmm. Because that's why, like, the album, like, ends on, like, a high note, even though, like, the mm-hmm. whole thing is just, like, wow, but I don't, like, if that makes any sense. But, that's how it began. So, yeah, and how it ended. So, yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I know that, for me, one of the things I definitely wanted to talk to you about is the experience of both producing most of the tracks and writing them. What does that process look like for you? Have you been going like production side first, or do you end up having lyrics first that you're like, this needs to have this sound to it? Or
it totally varies depending on the song itself. I spent a lot of time just writing just lyrics. Like, I have like bursting periods where I'll write a bunch of verses that mean whatever they meant to me in that moment. Mm-hmm. And times where I'll just produce a lot. And I think it's just a matter of like finding like the sort of balance of energy between those things. Like, there's a lot of verses that I've tried over a lot of those beats and they don't always work. And when I find the one that works, like, I know it works. So yeah, it's kind of just like solidifying that energy, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, just when I find these things like working together, like it'll bring something out of me, I would say. And it's like there's a certain like kind of passion I can hear in my own voice and like an excitement that I feel where it's like, this is the one. And sometimes like I'll make a beat and just write a verse for it. Sometimes I'll make a verse and then just produce a beat for it. But it all depends. It's all about how everything works in tandem, though, for sure.
Well, and because we're Facebook friends, and so I saw a recent post, and it's definitely one of these things that I know is a thing that people think about when they're making hip hop. But I think it's worth talking about, which is the idea of what it can be like to be in a position where you have produced a lot of your music, but you also are interested in like, okay, I want to hear what other people are producing.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's really fascinating because, you know, that collaboration in rap and in hip hop is like so powerful. Like, I think there's a degree to which,
definitely,
and it's all throughout it, you know, like, the idea of just being like, oh, I want you to hear what this sounds like, I want you to hear what that sounds like, yeah, is so prevalent,
yeah,
like in the way that artists work in the space. What has that meant for you?
Collaboration?
Yeah.
Oh, it's like integral. It completely changes the energy of everything that I make. Like, that's why I'm in so many projects, like, because I'm in, for those of you that don't know, I'm in four projects. There's my solo stuff, Joshua Virtue. There's also, I'm out of the Lap Club. That's it. It's over.
No, you're still in the Lap Club.
I'm still in it.
You're absolutely in the Lap Club.
I'm just taking this about. So,
never let anybody take that from you.
There's the Moody's Lap Society, that is where she's in lap at all.
Yeah.
And then there's the elite circle where she's in it from beginning to end.
Which is in 300 episodes.
I think there are
three people.
Yeah.
And there are people that have done it and then come back and then it didn't happen the second time. She's sometimes, some days she's just not feeling it.
It's like Excalibur. It's like just the silver, like they weren't worthy.
She's never sat in my lap for more than 10 minutes.
Dang.
Yeah. I like, we've had some bonding, like lap sitting bonding time, but not, you know, as much as I've seen with there's something else with Moody. I think there's kind of like a spiritual thing happening or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Maybe she's just tired sometimes.
No, I think this is my religion. This is what I believe. Yeah. Oh. No. I do think sometimes she's just tired. But.
Yeah. Right. But projects.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, this is informal. Y'all said that at the beginning. It was nice. It's kind of nice. So like, yeah, I'm in four projects. There's Not Lovely, which is a experimental hip hop jazz thing. It's hard for me to really call it that anymore because it's evolving a lot. It's the only band that I'm actually in with another rapper, Jack Clemens. They rap under Jack Is Okay, unless they decide to change it again. I don't know. But that's I'm also like, Lin Rye is the bassist for Not Lovely, and that's how we met each other. I'm also in this Uta Baby is me and my roommate and best friend Davis Blackwell. He raps on just Davis, and I produce all the stuff for that, and that's sort of like we described it on the Bandcamp thing as like anthemic diatribes by and for black nerds everywhere. Mm-hmm. So if I seem like aggressive on the Joshua Virtue stuff, like the Uta Baby stuff is like really where I'm aggressive, like where it's like I kind of like, it's like a positive outlet for just aggressive energy being a black AMAB person, and just where it kind of like fits where it needs to fit there, you know, like I think it has like a really, I feel like I'm fighting somebody when I record a Uta Baby track. And it has a completely different energy. I produce completely much darker material for that, that's not as melancholic, I would say. It's just more like fuck you-ish, which I like.
Yeah. There's gotta be a little bit of fuck you-ish energy in something you do.
Oh, definitely. Like, yeah, I think fuck you is the nucleus that holds this planet together at this point.
Absolutely at this point.
So
is there a more 2019 energy than fuck you?
Yeah,
fuck
for
you.
Real.
Fuck you, 2019. Sorry.
So I have a question. So you mentioned that kind of the genesis of this album came from kind of a self-care perspective.
Sure.
As someone who is naturally inclined toward collaboration, how did the genesis of kind of that isolationist moment in the beginning of this album, in your natural spirit of collaboration, how did that inform how this album started?
I'm not sure what you mean.
So it seems to me that like how you work and kind of your process is through collaboration.
Right.
And so I guess my question is, like, because the beginning of this album was in your pajamas by yourself, was that a departure from your usual process?
It's almost reverse. Like, okay. I spend way more time making my own shit, I think, than I do making anything else, to the point where it's like I'll neglect other projects because I'm just so caught up in my own stuff. I think, like, the collaborative aspect is more like, it's almost like the artistic manifestation of, I really need to get out of my house, you know? Or, like, I really need to, like, continue to interact and connect with people because it brings out a different energy. It brings out, like, a different aspect of myself that I might be neglecting and letting build up. Like, even, like, Free Snacks, which is, like, that's the last project I'm in. but Free Snacks is just me and Ruby Watson, who's a fantastic rapper and an amazing producer. He's dropping his solo effort for his first, like, debut solo project on April 12th, and it's gonna be fucking beautiful. It's one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard, and his production style is, like, so different from mine that it brought out, like, a completely different side of my voice. Like, it was a part of myself that, like, I had never even heard, and that's why I was so excited when that project came out, because, like, I would hear myself, I was like, I've never even heard myself like this before. And I think it's just necessary for me to survive and thrive is to continue working with other people and bouncing ideas off of other people from different walks of life and from different backgrounds. You know, mm-hmm. Sam's from, like, Kansas City, like, is a white dude, the only white dude, probably the only white male, white, like, white dude rapper that I fuck with. Davis is from Chicago, like, born and raised, like, actually, like, local Chicago. I don't consider myself from Chicago. I'm from, like, the area, but I'm, like, suburbs. And if you say you're from Chicago and you're from the suburbs and you're a rapper, then people are just like, fuck you, which is fair. Like, that's why I live in Bridgeport, because if I'm going to gentrify, I want to gentrify a cop neighborhood instead of anywhere else. Because fuck them. But, like, I don't give a fuck. Like, sorry that your fucking deli got shut down, you fucking racist asshole. Like, I don't give a fuck. But, like,
there's a if you really want to take a fucking ride, there's a Facebook group called Bridgeport, Chicago, Illinois, which is both, like, socialists and cops.
And, what the fuck?
But, like, not smart versions of either.
This is, and so they just share, like,
Trump memes and, like, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez stuff, and the discourse is, like, fucking weird.
It's but just like a versus Facebook page.
It's like, well, PvP, it's just Facebook. It's literally Bridgeport, Chicago, Illinois. Like, that's the group. Like, and
it's the place.
I don't know why they let me into this fucking group. But it's
like,
it's,
here you are in Andersonville in the Bridgeport group.
Yeah.
Just observing.
It's fucking cool, though. I mean, it's not cool. It's fucking trash. But, like, it's also, it's like good trash. Oh, it's, gosh, like, it's like the equivalent,
mean by,
of,
like,
watching
entertaining trash or, like, productive,
it's just,
trash.
It's, I think there are a lot of liberal folk that, like, don't understand how Trump was elected. Spend some time in that group and you'll be like, oh, no, they're, yep, that's how. Like,
yeah.
Oh, God.
Anyway, I do think that's really interesting, the idea of, like, the balance between mental health and social needs, you know, like, yeah, the, especially when it comes to, like, the artistic space, because those isolationist moments, like, are so important in art making, you know, to, like, because, so for you, like, how do you think about your identity individually, and how do you think about it in regards to when you are a collaborating force with other people?
Well, that's a good question.
300 episodes.
Oh, you feel yourself, okay. But, like, it's kind of like, wait, you know, just repeat the question one time.
Absolutely. Like, how, you know, when you're working, because of the fact that you're in so many projects, like, when you're working on, when you are in that kind of isolationist space, like Maureen was talking about, like, how do you, does your identity change?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I would say so. I definitely shift a lot in general, which I think is definitely a staple of my artistry, is that people and emotions and a mental headspace and an identity can change moment to moment, like sexuality and, like, you know, I mean, we're all, like, the product of a multitude of cultures, like, no matter how you want to say it, depending on, like, what you're wearing and how you do your hair and who you interact with on a daily basis, you're constantly shifting and molding different parts of yourself, I believe, or at least I am. And depending on who I'm around, I would say I become a very different person. The same, like, root energy, I guess, but I really feel like, I don't know. I mean, like, you know, like, you can only joke, you joke with different friends in different ways, right? Mm-hmm. And you show affection to different friends in different ways. Mm-hmm. So it kind of works the same way for me artistically, because to me, like, I don't know. Anyone that I collab with, like, that whole thing is like a center of love, like just like a gravity well of love to me, where we're creating something together. And when you create something with somebody, the way it should be is that you learn to love each other a little deeper, like, every time. And once that love is lost, I don't even want to fucking work with you anymore, really. I've never really had that happen, but I can't imagine it happening, because I don't really collab with a lot of people. There's a very select few that I this is gonna sound horrible, but almost like I find worthy, because I really do believe in my art form as a powerful and purifying force on this planet, which I think anyone should if they really Absolutely. Are putting their heart into it. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not purifying, I don't know, myself and others, and we're not, like, helping to, like, purify each other, like, when I use that word, like, I think I mean it in, like, a sort of just full actualization of self, you know, mm-hmm. like, without boundaries and without limits, mm-hmm. and but still incorporating a sense of love and like interconnectedness, because you can, like, be without boundaries and be a sack of shit because you don't have mm-hmm. any boundaries. But yeah, I don't know, I guess it's kind of complex, but yeah, I what were we talking about?
Well, no. A lot. I think that's there are some things I want to jump off of that, from what you were talking about, because it's definitely something listening to your music that I've been thinking more about. You know, with other music, I've thought about this too, but with especially hearing you talk about it, like, culture seems so important to your work and the way that you think, and the culture is so.
Yo, the culture, baby, for the culture.
Yeah.
Yo, this one's for the. Sorry.
Well, no, and I
just
think
it's
also,
so funny when people say that.
I do too. But I also, like, the thing that's interesting is I think it's not often that you have a project like yours that both, like Lucy, like that track, like,
sure,
where that's like a very specific part of Black identity that seems to, like,
definitely.
In so many ways, like Eric Garner, like we have this world where it is both like. A cultural what's the word I'm looking for, like people are so proud to know that what that means, you know, mm-hmm. there was, like, some video I saw that was like, oh, like, you don't know what a loose square is, like,
mm-hmm. yeah, definitely.
Like, and so that piece is really interesting, but then to also kind of balance something that is also very integral to your work is the idea of being willing to talk about emotion and mental health,
sure,
I think is really interesting. And so I'm curious, like, especially, like, you know, thinking about, like, Black nerd culture is, like, fascinating to that end too, because it's like it's like bringing in this idea of, like, I think that even people that really love hip hop, like, can come at it and not necessarily treat, like, Black people that make it as human.
Sure, definitely. Yeah. So, like, I was like, caricature, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like a minstrel show.
Yeah.
It's pretty fucky, but yeah.
Yeah. And so I don't have a fucking, I had a question to this, but then I just kind of, like, ended up getting into conceptual stuff, which is, like, very much. So I want to, like, so when it comes to, when you think about culture, when you think about the music that you're making, like, how do you, have you wanted to, an audience to receive it?
Oh, man. Oh, I mean, that's, I think that's something that I'm constantly working on, to be honest. Like, it's never fully done, because I'm not ever fully done. I think all marginalized people are working to sort of, like, shimmy out of, like, the, I guess, forgive this metaphor, because it sounds so, like, fucking art school socialist something, but mm-hmm. like shimmy out of, like, the chains of oppression,
mm-hmm.
and I'm constantly like redefining what the culture means to me and how I can work with it. I was raised in a, you know, semi-Christian, like not Jamaican household, but like my mom is from Jamaica. Mm-hmm. And not to say that she holds all these same beliefs now, but she's evolved too over time. And I was like raised in such a way that I was almost like, I was supposed to like look down on Black culture, because a lot of like Jamaican Christians end up looking down on Black American culture because they come here specifically to assimilate and redefine themselves in the context of America. And I've had to like reconcile my relationship with Black American culture, because I was taught that that was, you know, not something that, you know, you shouldn't promote that. It's like, oh, look at these, you know, they wouldn't say niggas, but like, I say, you know, I don't know. I mean, like, people would say niggas, you know, mm-hmm. and like just acting like these, just all these Black people. Like, it's such a weird thing. And then at the same time, even like, because I was raised to like speak, you know, correctly and within like correct English or whatever, a lot of Black people would say I speak white when I was growing up, which like correlates to the, or like roots back into the whole like Black nerd culture thing too. Like, I think a lot of black nerd culture is sort of like reaffirming your Blackness in the context of what someone explained to us the Blackness was supposed to be. And Blackness is dynamic, it's diverse, it like mm-hmm. it can be like not whatever it wants to be, but there's so many layers to it, and people limit it, you know, and bastardize that limit, even, which is so straight, not bastardize, but like de-promote that limit, mm-hmm. you know, which is its own like beautiful cell in itself. It's not even a cell, it's like a really organic thing that changes, like all cultures change consistently from time to time. And that's why like Lucy was like, I think, a really important song for me, because that was like, I mean, that dude is like, that's that dude. Like, you need that dude. You need mm-hmm. a Lucy in the morning, you know, like the DVD, like my mom would buy us bootlegs because we didn't have any fucking money. And mm-hmm. like, I bought Lucy's on the train because like, I need a square that bad. And I've seen people look at that guy as he's crossing from like train to train and like, just like, fucking cut him, like talk shit about him just for doing that. Mm-hmm. But like, somebody needs what that dude has. Like, somebody needs what that dude has to offer, you know? Like, people need entertainment. Like, kids need entertainment. You can't always go to fucking, not everyone can afford a fucking Netflix account. Them mm-hmm. CDs cost $1. Them DVDs, yeah. $1, man. Like, and, probably. Mm-hmm. And like, it's just, it's bullshit. Like, no one should be like shat upon for trying to survive. It's essentially what these people are doing, and for a dollar. Like,
as an outside perspective, like it's an interesting thing where I do feel like there is a myth with white folk that like, if there is a person that find them, like a Black person that finds themselves in that position where they're between cultures like that, that they have to be disparaging to that piece of the culture. And like, that's fucking shitty, because I do think the way that you speak about it is like really truthful, which is that the idea that any cultural experience isn't dynamic is foolish.
Right.
Like, in so many ways, like every cultural experience has these layers and it's part of every piece. And that to me is an interesting piece, especially with your art and the way that you were talking about art as a purifying force.
Right.
For you, how has creating art and creating the work that you've made, how does the purifying force come through with when the culture that you're working from, you know, is also dynamic, and it's important to you to verbalize that and to represent that?
How does the purifying force like come through? Meaning like,
how do those, what is there a relationship between those two things to you? Like, and what does it, are they cohesive
between your work? Say culture and quote unquote purification.
Like, when you think about the emotional space that you come to with your music.
Yeah, I think if I get the question right.
It's a weird question. And as I'm like,
300 yeah. episodes.
You don't always knock them out.
I was just playing. Mm-hmm. No, but yeah, all right. I think I know what you mean. It's like, yeah, I feel like that's a huge part of what I'm doing is sort of, you know, oh man, culture. culture is like so complex.
Well, and that's kind of where, because let me that's the thing is, I think there is a, like, the idea of purification, like, that's such a fucking, like, me as a white dude saying that, like, that's so, it can be so racist, like, it can be so problematic.
Yeah, I was thinking about that as it was coming out of my mouth. So I was like, let me define
as I'm thinking back on it now, like, that, it's an interesting, because, willingness and experience of going through and better understanding what experience has meant to, like, your mental health,
mm-hmm.
is really interesting to me, and being able to get to the point where you've been able to clearly make your expression dynamic to represent both.
Right.
Both identities that are at play,
yeah.
with the conversation, with, like, how the pieces of the conversation we're having. And so where I'm kind of getting at is that I feel like there are likely people that are listening that maybe find themselves steps back on that process.
Mm-hmm.
And so what advice would you give to yourself 2 years ago about trying to, you know, both have your art making be something that is, like, and I think we all agree that purifying is maybe the wrong word for it, but, like, that is soothing, that is cathartic,
sure,
but that also is true to what you want to say.
Well, first let me say that I don't think using the word purify is necessarily, like, wrong, you know, like, mm-hmm. And a conversation I had with Daniel Ryan once, but, like, Daniel Ryan has this motto that's, like, words have meaning. And we were in, like, kind of a heated debate, and we're still not finished with it, really. But I think, like, my sort of counter-argument, I guess, it doesn't even feel like an argument at this point, it just feels like we're trying to figure this thing out together.
Yeah.
But it was that words have meaning, but meaning is fluid. And shifts, and that's why I love the word nigga, because nigga was specifically used to condemn and just kind of pull apart a sense of self-worth and it's meant to make someone subhuman, really. But we took that and, like, reframed it in such a way that it's rooted in family now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a beautiful thing. If I were to look back at myself 2 years ago and ask myself any question, but what do I tell myself is, honestly, just, like, I was probably telling myself this 2 years ago too, but slow down. Like, you spend so much time trying to figure out who you are, and I feel like that's fine. You spend so much time trying to figure out who you are. You can spend your entire life trying to figure out who you are. And there's this idea that no matter how old you are, you're supposed to know already. And some people just kind of came out the womb just knowing, like, yeah, I know who I am. Like, there's people like that, but not most of us. Most of us are not like that. And the time you take to sort of explore yourself and figure out who you are is very important. It's important to do that for yourself, because if you don't, you're just going to be a mess, I think. You know, like, not a mess, but, I don't know, what is authenticity? You know, like, what is it like to be, like, a real person? Or, like, oh, yeah, they're so real, and, like, you know, like, you're constantly shifting. Like, no one idea is going to stick with you forever. Most of the time, you end up dropping ideas and refiguring them, like, within the course of hours, you can completely change what you thought about something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, you have to, like, allow that. You have to allow those periods of growth, and you have to allow yourself to make mistakes. Like, honestly, if I have one regret, like, it's that I didn't start releasing music sooner. Mm-hmm. Because if I had just started and allowed myself to fuck up a bunch of times in a row, like, there's a really interesting thing that happens when you put something out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you put something out, like, I've been making music for, like, 8 years, but I mm-hmm. barely put anything out. And once you put something out, you have a completely different, like, frame when you're looking at your work. It just becomes, like, it's so solid that you know so much more what your intentions will be on the next project. And I think that's what that allows for the evolution of your art form. That's why I think that, you know, when people are like, I don't think like people at quote unquote like the top, like Billboard motherfuckers like Solange and shit, like I don't think that Solange is like good because of just the resources that she has. I think that Solange is amazing because she's constantly like listening. I think this is a theory, but like she's constantly listening back to what she created and figuring out how can I push myself further? Like, what didn't I do? That's like, that's when, like when I compare those two, like when you compare like A Seat at the Table to, oh, fuck, I can't even remember the name of the new album actually. Cause I just listened to the, I don't even know the names of any of the songs. Mm-hmm. Just listen to the whole thing. But like, also that shit came out the day that I dropped my shit and that was so mm-hmm. weird. Like, I was like, no one should listen to me ever. This is way better. But like, I mean, it's just so drastically different. And the next thing that I'm making right now is so drastically different because I can see myself from a couple months ago very clearly, and I can see what other people saw in me. And like,
oh yeah, no, keep going.
No, please.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. And something else that I find really interesting about this discussion is like, yes, you know, she certainly has the time, and you know, releasing, and you have certainly had the time through releasing to self-evaluate, but like, the other benefit is that you have then an outside perspective of people giving you feedback. And right, like yeah. the difference between yeah, like exactly. releasing to like a DIY audience versus Solange releasing to America is like she's given the opportunity to get that much more
right,
feedback. Definitely. Yeah. Whereas like, have you found that like, do you, and I don't know, this is just off the dome.
Sure.
300 episodes.
Let's go.
But do you think that if you were releasing to, and this might sound shitty, if you were releasing to a larger audience, do you think that the evolution between projects would be larger, or do you think that it has more to do with just your own personal journey and your own self-evaluation?
Yeah, I don't know if it would be larger. It would definitely be different.
Yeah.
I think that's just that's a really interesting thing to me because I don't know. I've like been doing the D'Angelo thing for so long, mm-hmm. like just making hella content material that no one's ever gonna hear but me. That it's a really strange thing when you put something out finally, because like you have to now. I mean, like, what that album meant to me is so different than what it means to other people sometimes. Like, when someone tells me what they got from it, I'll be like, oh, that's great. Because sometimes, like, it's not at all what I intended, but, mm-hmm. like, people tell me things about it that I didn't even know were there. And the more feedback you get, like, the more people explain to you how it touched them and, like, what you incited in them, the more you understand what you wanted to do. And when you have like that many different outlets telling like this is what like, I really like, it's a double-edged sword because you might build off of that in a positive way, that but you also might lose a part of yourself because you're yeah. thinking of what other people, you know, expect from you or like what the problem was. And that's the thing that even now, even in like as small a community as DIY, I'll be worried about, you know, because like, I don't know, this thing's supposed to be like a holy like ritual ultimately. Like, I don't consider this isn't like, I mean like I'm fucked up. So it's like, to me, like, this isn't like music. This is like my vocation. Like, this is right. the fucking spirit speaking through me. Like, mm-hmm. I'm like channeling fucking God for us when I do this shit. Like, to me, yeah. it's not like a game, you know?
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. and some people will, it's really funny thing where like, you know, sometimes I'll play a show and people will sort of like treat like, yeah, dude, yeah, like play, y'all play Lucy, oh, yeah, dude. Like, mm-hmm. which is like beautiful in its own right. That's really cool. But sometimes I do like wish it was, I think like my favorite shows are the most somber ones, you know, those are like my earliest shows because they would be like in like, you know, like a fucking, my first show that I ever played for like Joshua Virtue was at Oratone Music. It was like a fucking, like, there's like a math rock band and like yeah. a free jazz band and like a noise dude or some shit like that. And it was like a completely different, like, sort of like crowd than I have now, you know, like, and I think that my release show was really cool because it was like the perfect like balance between those things. Like, it was, all of my closest friends were up front and they were like wilding the fuck out. But like, there was like a spirit in that room. I thought like there was a, it's just beautiful. And I can't like really put it into words, but I really worry sometimes about, like, I don't know, I don't know if I want to get famous. Like, I don't know if I really want to be that successful. Like, I really want to reach, I want, like, Namdi level fame. You know what I mean? Like, I want, like, just enough that, like, I can live off my shit and just tour year round, but not, like, lose myself. And not that, like, I don't know, Namdi will probably be bigger than, Namdi's for sure going to end up bigger than he is now. But, like, I don't know, like, is it, I just don't know how much it's worth it. Like, to lose that and to be, like, bombarded by perspective over the years.
Yeah.
I do want to ask, because that whole idea of getting to a place where you feel comfortable releasing a project is very interesting to me. Like, with this project specifically, with Post Faith Dialogues, like, what did that moment feel like for you? Like, was it pretty immediate that you felt like this is ready? Or was that having it feeling ready to release, like, how long, what was that part of the process like?
It was fucking awful. It was so horrible. I just am such a perfectionist when it comes to my shit. Which is funny because, like, I'm like, nah, fuck it. Everything, we do everything in the closet, but I'm also a perfectionist. It's really hard to be a perfectionist and record everything you do in the closet.
like, where this has to be exactly what I want it to be, but also I really want it to sound like...
perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just never, I don't know. I mean, like, I'm happy with the end result, but it was really interesting when I finally was like, yo, this is it. We're not doing any more work. And I was listening to it on my own and I would, like, hate everything, you know? And I just stopped doing it after a while as, like, the release date approached and just decided, you know what? I'm not, I ripped my hair out. I'm not even going to listen to it, like, for a few weeks. And we released it, we put it out, and, like, the feedback was just, like, it was fucking great. Like, everybody that I knew and a lot of people that I didn't know were just on board. And, like, this is a beautiful thing. And people that, like, I never dreamed would reach out to me and be like, yo, that was amazing. Like, hit me up and were like, dude, that was amazing. This is amazing. And I was like, oh, thank you. And I still didn't listen to it for, like, a while because I don't know. It was weird. It's almost like just it's finished. Like, let it lie for a bit. And then, like, now that, like, I've heard those things from other people, just how much it meant to them, like, I have a different perspective when I look at it because I realize, like, what it sounds like to someone else because of what people have told me. And I think it kind of gives it a lot more grounding, and I understand what I was creating more now, you know?
It's so hard to see the forest for the trees until someone that just sees the forest is like, it's great.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great forest.
Well, and it's interesting, like, when you're in the moment creating something and you're in a certain frame of reference, like, you know, at the beginnings of this album, you had just, like, anger quit a job.
Yeah,
and definitely. And which, like, deeply relatable, by the way. I've done that a couple times.
Let's go.
But it is, like, that is such a specific place to be in.
Yeah.
And then to then look at something that you created in that space, you know, however long out from that moment, must be absolutely wild. And to hear people like,
yeah, it's weird.
I'm sure. And to hear people being like, yeah, that was great. And you're like, yeah, but you don't know. Like,
I almost died. Like,
yeah. like, it's a good song, but
yeah.
Here's what was happening.
Here's what this means. Like,
yeah,
it's crazy. Like, just like hear the way that people like are so excited by like the lowest point in your in your year or like years even in your 20s maybe. Mm-hmm. Like the first song in the album is a lot like that because it's one of my favorite beats that I've ever made and one of the favorite verses that I've ever written. But like, I was like half crying basically when I recorded that shit. I'm like screaming, you know, I'm like screaming. And there's so many people really fuck with that song. And I'm just like, I really fuck with it too. But like, whenever I hear it, I'm like, man, things were bad. Things were so bad. Oh God.
I mean, it's like that for me. It's like that track on the, it wasn't the most recent, but this, it was, I'm pretty sure it was To Pimp a Butterfly. Where I was I also love that song, but like it's a similar thing where it's like, you know, that was like fucking like you can't record that track without just fucking like having like force yourself into some maybe not for I have no idea what the context of how he recorded that track, but like that the willingness with which to come to the recording of something with that degree of like transparency to emotional state, I think is so fascinating. Like, what do you think that, like, do you think it's just like who you are as a person, or like the kind of art that you're trying to make, that your willingness to do that shines through?
Oh, there's actually a very specific intention to that, because the reason that I make the, well, I mean, like, it's sort of the same thing where I'm sort of like, I'm trying to break the limits of, like, you know, black masculinity here, and I'm trying to, like, reframe and, like ultimately, like, just, I'm trying to, like, make that, I'm trying to, like, let that, like spread its wings and be whatever the fuck it needs to be. Like, I think that, like, I don't know, it's like, you know, a lot of people get twisted. It's like, you know, there's masculinity and there's toxic masculinity. And, like, I think masculinity is a beautiful force. I think that femininity is a beautiful force. I think that black men should not be, like, confined to one aspect of sexual orientation or you know, gender identity. It's insane. And it's a really prolific thing, not just in the black community, but the way that the black community is viewed and how black men are viewed by, like, outside perspective. And to me, like, I mean, like, I'm queer, so it's like, I wanted to, but I also, like, you know, I got fucking bars, and I can fucking spit, and I can make dope ass fucking beats that nobody else can fucking make, and all my shit is better than everyone else's shit, frankly. Yeah. And, like, I just, I think all my shit's the best shit, frankly.
Yeah,
but like, and it's like, but I'm also, like, fucking, like, half crying on shit, and I'm, like, just talking about how fucking sad I am. But, like, I also, like, can, like, channel, like, aggression into my sadness and reframe that so that it becomes something beautiful. Like, this shit has a, the point of this is to, like, dismantle, like, what black masculinity has been confined to. And I think I'm doing a good job, at least for the people that hear me, you know, like, I think,
Well, and it's important that you feel as though you're accurately representing what you're currently working through yourself.
Yeah.
I think that.
Yeah. So it's all processing. Like,
yeah. Well, and I think that that's another really important aspect of recording and then being done with it and then releasing it, is that it is autobiographical. You can now look back at that and be like, oh God, like, that's that, I remember specifically where I was at that point. And it allows you a frame of reference to then look back on and be like, okay, this is where I'm at now, and this is where I've grown from.
Right.
Or this is where I've regressed from. Or, you know, however, wherever your life takes you. And, like, have you had the opportunity, like, you know, with it being released, have you had kind of, have you given yourself the space to think about, like, okay, this is where I was, and this is where I am now?
Yeah, definitely. It's been a really weird thing, because I kind of felt like, I was like, oh, I'm going to call this, like, post-faith dialogues. And what that meant before was just, I'm done with, I'm out, I don't believe in anything now. But now, like, I have, like, probably, I'm more faithful, I think, than in myself and in my community and the people around me than I ever have been. And that, like, people can change, and, like, that love is, like, you know, real and not just a stupid word that the Beatles fucked up, you know, like, because they fucked it up. I don't know. I think just the Beatles fucked up love. but like,
wait, how?
I just I don't know. Just, like, shut up, John Lennon. Like, you beat your fucking kid up. Like, just no. Like, just, I don't know.
John Lennon wasn't a great guy.
You know, he's not a great guy. He was not a great guy. Lukewarm take. Like, honestly.
Yeah. No.
But, like, fuck, what does it sound like? Kind of all heated talking about John Lennon. I don't know if it's the radiator or John Lennon. Or
I know. Over.
No, the kind of, like, yeah, like, giving yourself the space of perspective.
Right, yeah. Well, I think that's the whole thing is, I mean, not to keep plugging, like, the new shit is being working on, but, like, I'm in the process of making, like, my next piece right now, and that piece is so drastically different from the one before it. It's so much more positive, and it's so much more, like, I mean, it's so melancholic, but it's like, it's almost like, oh shit, whole ship's going down, y'all, we might as well dance it out. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, like, it's not dancey really, but, like, it's so much more positive and, like, just, like, head noddy, and I don't know, it makes me, like, much, I get happy when I listen to it. I don't get, like, when I listen to, like, the old shit, it's not like I don't like it, but, like, it's kind of like listening to fucking Radiohead. Like, you don't listen to Radiohead to be happy, you listen to Radiohead because, like, just, like, I gotta feel something right now. Yeah. And, like,
Well, and that's the hearing of the way you talk about the next project is really interesting to me, because like I, you know, this similar conversation reminds, this conversation reminds me a lot of like the experience of why I always, what I was going to like Earl Sweatshirt for.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing between the two.
I can talk
about Earl for hours. Well, the between the two albums, like, yeah. So what do you think about the most recent, the one from like a year, what was the?
Last year? Or?
I don't do shit. No, wait.
Yeah, I don't like shit. I don't go outside.
Yeah.
I'm a really big Earl Sweatshirt fan.
Yeah. Well, what? How do you? Because the hearing you talk between this project and the next is kind of an interesting parallel to me, in that it's the opposite. Well, it's actually like, because I feel like Earl started like that. The album right before that was like playing with this idea of like communicating depression and like dealing with mental health.
Definitely.
But it almost feels like he doubled down on that for the next album.
Oh, when you say double down, what do you mean? You mean like he's more depressed? Because it's such a more positive album. Like it's like so much more like. It's so much more so. It's like more critical. It's like he's like forgiving himself for all the shit that he's been putting himself through, because he's just like, I'm fucked up and that's okay, but I'm working through it. And then, whereas like the last one was just like, yo, I'm fucked up. I'm really fucked up. You know, like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe I have to re-listen to this, because this is definitely a take I had like a year ago. That
go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was like the. Because definitely like lyrically, but I just remember like production wise, I was like it was further not high end, like low energy.
Oh, you mean like as far as his like delivery goes?
The production.
Like, oh, you mean on the new one?
Yeah.
Like some rap songs, you mean? Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I don't know. It's really interesting. Like I really fuck with that album so hard. Like it's so brief. It's exactly like what it needs to be. He just takes these really simple loops and doesn't do that much to them. Mm-hmm. He doesn't, yeah. And it's funny how you say like lazy, because it is like there's not that much like I really think it's like very intentional, though. I don't think that he's just like lazy about it. I think it's just like, I'm going to let this thing exist as it is, which is also like a balance between like how he's, yeah, what he's saying lyrically too, where it's just like, this is just who I am right now. Like, mm-hmm. This is just who I am. And I think that that's what makes that album so appealing to me. Like, I love when niggas, like, break the rules of rap, because, like, rap's supposed to be, like, polished and perfect, and, like, niggas will hear your shit and just be like, yeah, I don't know, man, I thought the production wasn't really up to quality, but, like, fucking who's quality?
Right.
Like, who's fucking quality?
Absolutely.
Like, somebody told you that that's what music's supposed to fucking sound like, and, like, there's no way it's supposed to sound. It's just vibrations. Mm-hmm. You do what the fuck you want with them, you know? And, like, that's, I think, the most important thing about that album to me is that nigga was just doing what the fuck he wanted with vibration in that moment. It was all for him, and we got to fucking just peep in. We just got to look at it. It's really fucking cool, you know? Like, I'm trying to do that. Like, Quelle Crispy doing shit like that. Like, fucking, like, there's so many good rappers who just, like, are like, yo, like, this is what it is. Fucking, like, mm-hmm. Fucking Viper be doing that shit.
Yeah.
And Viper just fucking shits out a song and just, mm-hmm. like, this is for you.
Yeah.
That shit on YouTube.
And I definitely don't mean to say it when I say double down, meaning to mean, like, that it was worse to that end, but that idea of it being for him,
sure, yeah, is, okay, definitely,
yeah
I'm with
very
you.
Interesting,
yeah, definitely,
yeah. We definitely have a few minutes left before we have a few minutes left.
Cool. I'd love for you, well, you, like, honestly, with like how much you have to plug,
mm-hmm.
I want to kind of give you like a lot of space to talk about what you have upcoming.
Ooh, okay. How very kind of y'all. Well, so the illustrious Ruby Watson and Davis, Ruby Watson of Free Snacks and Davis of Yuta Baby, which are other projects that I'm involved in. The three of us together have, we're starting a record label now. It's called Why Records, WHY Records. And the idea is that we're just gonna just put shit out that we fuck with, obviously. And so I mean, like, I just be trying to like plug us like all the time, like they're like the homies. So Ruby Watson is putting out his solo effort on April 12th. It's like a fucking beautiful, beautiful album. Davis is featured on it. Ruby Watson's having his release show on April 13th. Yuta Baby will be playing. That show is at Nude Beach. You can hit me up on the FB if you want the, you know, blah, 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 the DMs and shit. Also find me on the Instagram. That's Corn is the Devil on Instagram. Or you can search Joshua Virtue. If you know, you know. Corn is the Devil. But,
wait, why is Corn the Devil?
Because it's a monocrop and it's a fucking cataclysm on, like, biodiversity because corporations are fucking evil. And they just cut down everything and kill everything so they can plant hella corn. And it's in everything, and we need it. It's so also our, like, sugar is corn, basically.
Yeah, are like, wheat and soy then also evil?
I'd say, yeah, sure.
Yeah. No, yeah. This is just because, like, I'm interested because I know that those are, like, the three subsidized crops.
Word. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, the government pays for that.
Yeah, so that's why they're so, like, farmers, the reason that farmers are so intense about planting wheat, soy, and corn
right.
is because, yeah, the government pays them to do it. Whereas if they were to plant, like, tomatoes, the government's right. like, oh, I don't really care.
Yeah, definitely backs up that take, for sure.
Uncle Sam doesn't like tomatoes.
Yeah, no. Uncle Sam doesn't give a shit about tomatoes.
He doesn't give a fuck about it. Where are we going? yeah, but, again, I'm plug the Instagram. Corn is the Devil. All right. Let's see. What other shows do I have coming? Fucking 1,000 shows. There is on 4/20 I'm playing two. Actually, you don't cut that, but because I got to get to that, and we're gonna go chronologically. But April 19th, Eli Orko of Ohio is coming in to play a show. It's gonna be fucking sick. He's such a good ass rapper. Look up Eli fucking Orko. He's so fucking good. And Free Snacks will be playing the only show that we're playing in the month of April with him. Mohawk Johnson is also on the bill. So is this band called Bottle Blush. I don't know them, but I assume they're dope. On 4/20, there will be two Joshua Virtue shows, actually, the day of 4/20. The first show is at Archer Ballroom. It's this Dizzy Invert Fest, which is a big punk fest. Yeah, y'all know. But if you don't know, now you know, nigga. Dizzy Invert Fest, I'm going to be playing like 5:30 on the dot because apparently Archer Ballroom is not really doing very well with their neighbors right now. So everything starts on fucking time for sure because they have a sound cut at like 10:30. But
shit.
Yeah. And then after that, I'm playing Observatory with Malky, Lamon, Manuel, and Manuel, and I can't even remember who the last person is because I'm fucking inundated with projects and events all the time. But that's gonna be sick because Malky's the homie. If you haven't looked up Malky, what the fuck are you doing with your life? Because Malky is like everyone's like big cousin in rap DIY as far as I'm concerned, and really just puts all you niggas to shame production wise so but,
I love how everything he posts is so aesthetic too.
Yeah, it's just like off. It's beautiful. Yeah. Also, like, just his like lingo, like his like Malky is like one of the only people where the way he speaks on social media is exactly how he speaks in real life. Like, I can totally hear his voice, and I love that. Yeah, and that's all the stuff I think that I have coming up shortly, and I'll let y'all know otherwise for sure. Oh, also, the fucking wonderful Clyde Moreau is playing the Ruby Watson release show on 4/20. Clyde Moreau is also releasing his solo debut soon, and it's gonna be fucking lit. I listened to it; it was very beautiful. Or I listened to the whole thing, but he sent me one track because he's a secretive asshole. So, yeah, I don't know. Support black-owned businesses.
Nice,
awesome.
Please.
Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Daniel. Thank you, great. Maureen. Y'all are wonderful. What wonderful people. What wonderful cat. They didn't come back though.
Where is she?
I think she's napping somewhere.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you all so much for listening. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. Thank you all so much for listening. I've been Dan Johansson.
That's right. I continue to be Maureen Smith.
If you want to keep up with what we are up to, there are so many ways you can do that. The first is to head over to scobbymag.com. That's our website. We post all of our articles there as well as all of our podcast episodes. You can also find us on social media on Facebook. We have a Facebook page called Scobby Magazine. We also have a Facebook group that we love and adore called Sounding Board, where we talk about local arts, local politics, and astrology memes. You can also find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Tumblr under Scopimag, spelled the same way as the website, S-C-A-P-I-M-A-G. And you can find the podcast, the one that you're listening to right now, Scoppy Radio, in most podcast places, including Google Play, iTunes Podcasts, and Radio Public.
And I'm here, as always, to talk about the importance of subscribing. If you head to our website, scoppymag.com, and go to our subscribe page, there are a couple ways that you can do that. The first is to sign up for email blasts. This is huge because even though we post across social media platforms, Facebook buries our content. So if you want to see 100% of what we're doing and not just 30% of it, you should sign up for those email blasts. Mm. The second thing you can do is become a member. For as little as $2 a month, you can help us sustain what we're doing. Speaking of sustaining, we're in the middle of a fundraising campaign. We recently just added that $2 a month membership level. We are trying to not put up a paywall. So if you want to help us remain accessible to everybody, please consider donating at $2 a month. Hit us up if you have any questions. Also, we have merch for sale. Head to scoppymag.com/store if you want to buy your new favorite t-shirt, and that is a promise. Also, if you are a business or an entity or just have something fun to say and want to advertise with us, please feel free to reach out to us at scoppymag@gmail.com. So, give a little, give a lot, and if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Cool. Thanks again so much for listening. Go out and make something.
Yep.